It's not that hard to ascertain whether a story is fake or not. What's harder is to assess the comparisons that columnists and comedians have been making between Donald Trump, who is not yet president, and other leaders who are in the history books. One comparison has been getting a lot of traction, and it's one that was first brought to mass media nearly a year ago by Daily Show host Trevor Noah.
Now, I understand that Trump is a little scary. A little exotic for some. A little out of America's comfort zone, but this great country is capable of bold leaps. It took one in 2008 when it elected its first black president. Now in 2016, I say it's time to be bold once more and elect America's first African president.
An intriguing joke at the time, but since then there have been more than a few writers comparing the president-elect to some of Africa's longest-serving, most corrupt leaders. Indiana University historian Marissa Moorman thinks the comparisons are a little too easy.
I think it raises some interesting questions, but it's obviously a limited sort of comparison. It, you know, it lacks nuance, but it does raise some interesting questions, and it does some useful work in making us think in different ways and challenging our notions about the way democracy works in our own country.
So specifically, where do you think the comparison falls down?
It falls down in the sense that we don't live in an entirely authoritarian society. Democracy still works in many ways. The press is still functioning, and there are a number of things that any one of us can do without having our liberty of expression curtailed. At the same time, I think the comparison opens up some interesting challenges to what we think of as the very liberal and open democracy that we live in.
What do you think the questions are that are raised by the comparison?
The questions have to do, I think, very particularly with the kind of campaign that Trump ran, the kinds of people that he's appointing to his cabinet and to his staff, and the kind of person that he is and the kind of politician and president he will be.
One thing that you haven't mentioned where there do seem to be some parallels is nepotism. I mean, there's a lot of nepotism in the presidential palaces across the African continent, and we are seeing a lot of Trump's family in the transition process, and there's a sense that they'll be involved in some aspects of goings-on at the White House. Some parallels there, perhaps, with African dictators?
For sure. I'd be very happy to speak to this. In fact, I've been thinking about it quite a bit. The place which I know best, which is Angola, suffers from many of these same problems of nepotism and conflict of interest in business. The president, José Eduardo dos Santos, has numerous business interests. His daughter, as well, holds numerous business interests in Angolan banks, and she's just been named to be the director or head of the national oil company, Sonangol, as of June 2016. And this is obviously raising a lot of alarms for Angolans, as well as for people outside the country. U.S. diplomats have, of course, advised Angolans and the Angolan government not to have politically exposed persons, people like the president, his daughter, the generals that are closest to him, involved in the banking sector, for example. So I think there's a real contradiction there between what, for example, the U.S. State Department is advising their government and what our new president-elect is doing, violating the very kinds of laws we ask other governments to uphold.
Yeah, you wonder why the State Department isn't giving the same advice to the White House. So spell this out for us. What's the danger here?
Well, the danger is, of course, that, you know, nepotism. I think it's obvious that there's just too much closeness and that they have interests. And then all of those children are also involved in his businesses, as is Jared Kushner. And the concern there is, of course, that Trump is by far the wealthiest president we have had in the history of this country. He also has numerous business interests overseas. So, of course, people who come to meet with him, as the Japanese prime minister did just a few days ago, it's never going to be entirely clear whether what they're discussing is separate from them things like business interests. If those people are later on perhaps trying to also curry business favor or making political negotiations or decisions based then on business interests as well.
Marissa Moorman, historian at Indiana University. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Marco.